20. The air in the forward infirmary reeked of bacta-salve and scorched flesh, and casualties were jammed 3 and 4 to a bay. Yet Titus had an entire corner to himself, and not because his injuries warranted it. He had only a few broken bones and some damaged organs. There were patients here who had lost half their limbs to the explosions Luke had caused, and others with third-degree burns over half their bodies. But the triage droid was skillfully directing new patients to every treatment hub except Kytus's, perhaps because its compassion module could read in their averted glances and angry grimaces the same thing Titus felt in their force auras: hostility, anger, and fear. They blamed him for the sabotage, as though he should have foreseen the detonation of all 4 long-range turbolaser batteries, as though he had caused it by attacking Kashyyyk in the first place. They were right, of course. Had the Anakin Solo not been setting fire to the Rosheers, Luke would never have tried anything so foolhardy, nor would the Bothans have come to the Wookiee's aid, along with the Corellians and much of the rest of the enemy's fleets, if infirmary rumors were to be believed. Kytus had sacrificed the lives and well-being of a couple of 1,000 crew members to draw the Confederation away from the Battle of Kuat. And he would do it again. Now that he had moved the battle away from the Corps, Coruscant was no longer at risk, and he had bought the Alliance time to regroup. Now all that remained was to withdraw and let the traitors believe they had driven him back. Kytus sat up, savoring the fiery bolts of pain that shot through him with the effort, and swung his legs over the side of the gurney. His uniform and cloak, now completely shredded after being cut off his body, were draped half in and half out of a disposal bin in the corner, and his equipment belt was hanging over the back of an empty chair. He felt uncharacteristically vulnerable, partly because he was wearing only infirmary-issue underclothes, but mostly because he couldn't help looking at the empty lightsaber hook on his belt. Luke had beaten him. Luke had just kept coming despite his injuries. He had inflicted more damage on Kytus than he had suffered himself, and he had even escaped the garrote before Ben struck. In fact, it was probably that attack that had saved Kytus's life. Nothing else could have shocked Luke out of his battle rage. Only the sight of Ben slipping so far to the dark side. It was a memory that both frightened Kytus and burned his pride, but it was one that he would have to contemplate at length. Now he knew what to expect when Luke discovered who really killed Mara. And when Luke came after him next time, Kytus would be ready. Provided, of course, he escaped this battle first.
"Where's Orlop?"
Kytus demanded of no one, and everyone in particular.
"I asked for my aid 10 minutes ago."
The Bith surgeon and his Kodruji assistant exchanged glances over Kytus's shoulder, but it was the skull-faced M.D. droid who answered.
"You're in no condition for duty, Colonel Solo."
The droid gently tried to push Kytus back down. "If you continue to ignore Dr. Kilku's advice about sitting up, we may have to sedate you."
"Try it."
Kytus turned to Kilku.
"I'm tired of hearing that squawking. Can't you override him?"
Kilku's cheek folds flattened in alarm, and he looked to the droid.
"The Colonel has an extraordinary constitution, M.D. If he feels strong enough to sit up, it will be better to let him."
"Very well." The droid raised its hand, extruding a hypo from the tip of its index finger. "Then perhaps an injection of painkillers will make him less irritable."
"No painkillers. I need a clear head."
Actually, Kytus was feeding on the pain, burning it like fuel to keep his hormone levels high and his mind alert.
and I need my aid.
Kilku glanced outside the bay and nodded. Orlop stepped around the partition, one of Kytus's spare uniforms tucked under his arm, and the ever-present datapad in hand.
There's no need to be cross, Colonel.
Orlop's long genet snout twitched in disgust, no doubt at the smell of Kytus's wounds.
Perhaps painkillers would be a good idea.
Be my guest,
Kytus retorted. He pointed at the datapad.
What's the tactical situation?
You're going to wish you were still unconscious.
Orlop tapped a few keys on the datapad and passed it over.
The good news is that your plan worked beyond all expectations.
Orlop wasn't exaggerating. The tactical feed showed the Fifth Fleet, with the Anakin Solo at its center, surrounded by the enemy. The Wookiee fleet was shielding Kashyyyk from any further bombardment, while the Bothans, Corellians, and the remnants of the Kaminoian and Hutt fleets attacked from the rear.
What happened to Boatu and Darklighter?
Kytus demanded.
They should be relieving us by now.
Admiral Boatu sent his regrets,
Orlop replied.
Apparently, he and Admiral Darklighter were ordered to hold their forces inside the core.
Of course.
Kytus didn't need to ask who had issued the order. Cha'Neothel was too good a tactician to overlook an opportunity to have the enemy eliminate her rival, even if it did mean sacrificing a little thing like the Fifth Fleet.
I was expecting this betrayal.
You were?
Orlop sounded genuinely relieved.
In that case, you may want to brief Admiral Atoko on your plan. He's given the order to prepare all vessels for scuttle and abandonment.
Without consulting me?
You were unavailable,
Orlop explained.
I'm available now.
Jason slipped off the gurney, then groaned in shock as the small impact of landing on the deck sent halos of pain radiating out from his two back wounds. His knees buckled, and he would have fallen if the MD droid's hand hadn't shot out to hold him up. In your condition, standing is out of the question, the droid informed him. Even if the swelling in your brain doesn't destroy your balance, you have burn damage to your kidney and a perforation in your lung. You're simply too weak.
I'm a master of the Force, M.D.
Kytus jerked his arm free of the droid's grasp, then thrust the datapad back into Orlop's hands.
I'm never weak.
Using the Force to hold himself upright, Kytus limped over to the Walcom and opened a channel to the bridge. When the familiar voice of his communications officer answered a moment later, he asked her to connect him to Atoko. While he waited, he took his uniform from Orlop and slowly, painfully dressed. Finally, the Admiral's surprised voice sounded over the comm speaker.
Colonel Solo, how are you feeling?
Well enough to retain command.
Kytus allowed enough anger into his voice to let Atoko know he did not appreciate having his authority usurped.
And I don't recall giving orders to scuttle the fleet.
And neither have I. Yet.
Atoko didn't seem fazed by Kytus's displeasure, perhaps because he suspected that soon neither of them was going to be in command of anything.
But the Wookiees are starting to launch boarding craft. Rather than allow our assets to fall into enemy hands,
why aren't you attempting to fight free, Admiral?
Kytus demanded.
If the Fifth is going to be vaped, at least it can take a few Bothans along.
The speaker fell silent, and, were it not for the steady crackle of turbolaser interference, Titus would have assumed the channel had been closed. As he waited for Atoko to acknowledge the order, or at least to respond, he slowly began to realize that the Admiral wasn't the only one who had been shocked by the command. Kilku and his assistant were both oozing dismay and disbelief into the Force, and even the normally unflappable Orlop was shaking his head in amazement.
"Admiral Atoko, I seem to be sensing a problem with my order," Kaidas said. "Is something unclear?"
"No, sir," Atoko said. "It's very clear, all too clear."
"Then there must be a flaw in it," Kaidas said. "What is it?"
The crews," Atoko replied. "There are over 70,000 beings in the Fifth. We can't just order them to their deaths."
"Ah."
Kaidas had planned to escape in a stealth X if Neothel betrayed him, so it had not occurred to him that the crew members of the Fifth might be reluctant to give their lives for the Alliance.
"You think the vessel commanders will refuse?"
"With no chance of survival or escape, it's a possibility," Atoko said carefully. "Destroying a few enemy ships isn't going to seem like a worthwhile sacrifice when the alternative is an honorable surrender."
"I suppose not," Kaidas admitted. "So when the time comes, we should remind them that those are Wookiee boarding parties, and the Fifth has been shielding the Anakin Solo while we burned Kashyyyk."
Again the speaker fell silent, but only for a moment.
"I think that will persuade them, Colonel."
"I thought it might," Kaidas said. "Cancel the scuttle preparations and ready the fleet for a penetration attack. I'll give you the coordinates once I've studied..."
"Excuse me, Colonel."
Orlop shoved the datapad at Kaidas again.
"But I believe you will find the coordinates fairly obvious."
Kaidas took the datapad. His vision was still a little blurry, and all he could see was a tight cluster of unreadable designator codes popping onto the top edge of the screen. For a moment, he didn't understand what Orlop was suggesting. Then the Corellian fleet began to move aside, creating room for the new arrivals to join in the encirclement of the Fifth.
"Very good, Orlop," he said. "Admiral Atoko, we'll make for the seam between the Corellians and the newcomers. If we time this right, we should be able to battle through and save at least a third of our strength."
There was a moment of uncomfortable silence. Then Atoko's voice asked,
"Battle through, Colonel?"
"Of course,"
Kaidas said.
"You don't expect them to let us pass without a fight, do you?"
"Well, yes. That's exactly what I expect," Atoko said.
Kaidas scowled at the datapad. On the little display, the cluster of new arrivals was growing denser by the second, rendering the designator codes more unreadable than ever. Now that he studied it more carefully, the Corellian fleet was moving too abruptly and too far to simply be making room. They were worried about crossfire. Kaidas tapped a key, enlarging the image so much that the new arrivals vanished from the display, and he found himself looking at a detailed schematic of the Fifth's battle deployment. Orlop quietly took the datapad from his hands.
"It's our side," he said quietly. "Those are Novas and Battle Dragons arriving."
"The Hapens?"
Kaidas gasped.
"Colonel Solo still seems rather confused,"
the M.D. droid said to Kilku. It's imperative that we declare him unfit for duty. Kytus was so relieved he did not even flip the droid's circuit breaker. He simply spoke into the Walcom again.
My apologies, Admiral. You're quite right. Let's make for the Hapens. I'll be in contact again as soon as I return to the bridge and have access to proper battle intelligence.
Kytus picked up his utility belt, then motioned for Orlop to follow, and left the infirmary feeling more cheerful inside than he had in ages. His parents had turned the Wookiees against him. His classmate Lobaka had hurled a shadow bomb at him. His uncle had nearly killed him, and his cousin had planted a vibra dagger so near his heart that the handle had twitched in time to his pulse. But Tennel Ka had come to his rescue. She had proven once again that he could always count on her, that no matter what he asked of her, she was willing to do more. Because she believed. She understood what he was trying to do for the galaxy, for her and Alana, and she knew it could not be done without risk and sacrifice. Perhaps one day, after he had won this war and brought a just peace to the galaxy, perhaps then they would no longer need to hide their relationship. Perhaps they would even be able to perform their duties from the same world and live together like a normal family. Kytus opened himself to the Force long enough to reach out to her in thanks, and was astonished to find her not far away on Hapes, but nearby with her fleet. She had come to his aid personally. He was not certain that he approved of her taking part in battles. Who would protect Alana if something happened to her? But he was touched, and he flooded his gratitude into the Force. Tennel Ka's presence turned sad and lonely underneath. At the same time, she seemed to be urging patience, reaching out in invitation. And he realized she wanted to talk. Afraid that something had happened to their daughter, he reached out and found Alana where she should be, far, far away, happy and presumably safe. Kytus replied to Tennel Ka by filling his presence with curiosity, then snapped his comlink off his utility belt and opened a channel to his communications officer, Lieutenant Krova.
Queen Mother Tennel Ka needs to talk to me, he said. Prepare a secure channel to the Dragon Queen and contact me when you have her.
Right away, Colonel, Krova said. But it will take a short time to match our scrambling protocols. The Hapens have not been very forthcoming.
I'm aware of the difficulties, Kytus said. I won't hold you responsible for the delay.
Thank you, Colonel. I'll ping you when we have Her Majesty on the channel.
By then they were leaving the infirmary. The corridor outside was packed with two very different kinds of casualties. Those who were going to die no matter how quickly they reached a Bacta tank, and those who would most likely survive until they were transported to one of the Anakin Solo's other infirmaries. There were few beings with only minor injuries. As Kytus squeezed through the crowded corridor, with a battered face and bandaged head, he could feel the admiration of the Anakin Solo's crew for his courage and dedication. But he also sensed their fear of his brutality and their resentment of the callous way he was spending their lives. They did not love him as did the Coruscanti public, but they were in awe of him. And as long as Kytus remained confident in himself and his mission, he felt certain they would follow him into the core itself. It took a full minute before they reached a corridor that wasn't jammed with casualties and medical droids, and another 30 seconds to reach a shooter station. They descended a short ramp, stepped into a crew car, and announced their destination, then allowed the onboard brain to scan their retinas to establish their identity and security clearances. A moment later, the car lurched into motion, dropping down a blue durasteel tunnel into the network of shooter tubes, horizontal repulsors that whirred and rattled personnel and equipment through the Anakin Solo's immense length. Kytus settled back in his seat, sinking into his pain, and was surprised at how much he just wanted to sleep. The fight with Luke had drained him, of course, but this exhaustion was emotional and spiritual. He was growing ever more isolated as his friends and family deserted him, and his followers began to see him as something more than human. There was no one around him with whom he could share his feelings, as he had once done with Jaina, or seek advice from, as he had once done with Luke, or turn to for unconditional support, as he had once done with his parents. Now there was only Tenel Ka, who was all those things to him during their brief trysts, and the hope that one day they could be together always. Kytus closed his eyes and let his mind drift into the future, not seeing it through the Force, but imagining it with his heart. That was when his comlink pinged for attention, when he checked the display and saw that Krova already had a channel open to Tenel Ka. His weariness vanished, and even the pain of his injuries began to diminish. He activated the mic, then said, "Queen Mother, what a pleasant surprise. I knew the Alliance could count on you."
"The Alliance, yes, Jason," she said, using his name instead of his title to signal that their conversation would be personal. Kytus didn't like the old name. It reminded him of the timidity and indecision that had been his weakness as a younger man. But she wouldn't understand being asked to call him by his Sith name. At least, not yet.
"But I am afraid that is no longer true for you."
"What?"
Kytus's heart did not sink, nor did his anger well up inside him, because he simply did not believe what he was hearing.
"Our signal must have gotten scrambled. It sounded like you said I can't count on you."
"I'm afraid you heard correctly."
Tenel Ka's voice sounded as though it were cracking, though it was difficult to be certain over the tinny tones of a comlink, especially with the air hissing past as the little crew car whirred through the shooter tube.
"In fact, I am asking for your surrender."
"My surrender?"
Kytus began to worry that the MD droid had been right, that he truly was unfit to return to duty.
"Can you hold on a second? I've got to check something out."
Without awaiting her reply, Kytus turned to Orlop.
"We are in a crew car on the way to the bridge, correct? I am speaking to Queen Mother Tenel Ka over the comlink, am I not?"
"We are,"
Orlop said, nodding.
"I'm sorry, Colonel, but you're not hallucinating."
"That's what I was afraid of."
Even now, Kytus's heart did not sink. This had to be a misunderstanding. Once he explained his strategy to Tenel Ka, she would retract her request and resume full support. He reopened the channel.
"Look, Tenel Ka, I can't explain over a comm channel, but I had good reasons for slipping away from the Battle of Kuat."
"I'm sure you did," Tenel Ka replied. "You always have good reasons for breaking your promises."
Kytus's anger began to rise.
"I was trying to save the home fleet and much, much more. You'll understand when I can explain."
"Perhaps so," Tenel Ka said. "You might even be able to explain why you took control of the Academy on Ossus after you promised to make peace with Master Skywalker. But how can you explain sending Ben to assassinate Chief Omus, Jason, a 14-year-old boy,
I didn't, Kaida said. He misinterpreted a report and assumed...
I am a Hapen queen, Tenelka interrupted. You won't deceive me with equivocation, Jason. It is an insult that you even try, and there can be no excuse for what you are doing to Kashyyyk. Setting the Roshirs ablaze? What are you thinking?
I am thinking the Wookiees betrayed us, Kaidas replied. I am thinking that they brought this on themselves. Everything else I can explain only in person.
Good. I shall be looking forward to that, Tenelka said. You will instruct Admiral Atoko to follow my father's orders, and I'll send a skiff for you. Kindly present yourself unarmed.
You'll send a skiff? Kaidas fumed. Tenelka, you can't believe I'm going to surrender. To you or anyone else.
I am hoping you will.
Tenelka's voice was sad but firm.
Because it is going to break my heart to open fire on you.
Kaidas's rage exploded inside him, and his thoughts began to whirl in disbelief. He reached out to Tenelka in the Force, but found her aura drawn in tight, her presence unavailable to his touch.
Even you? He gasped. I thought you were made of stronger stuff, Tenelka. I thought you understood what I'm trying to accomplish.
She's plenty strong, kid, said the familiar voice of Han Solo. It's killing her to do this, and I don't get it. Personally, I'd just as soon blast you back to Adams and pretend you died in that fight with Onimi.
Dad.
The word felt strange in Kaidas's mouth, as though he were using it to address someone else's father.
I should have known you were behind this. I suppose Mom is there, too?
Right beside him,
Leia confirmed. Her tone was resolute, but also sad.
Listen to Tenelka. I don't want to see another son die.
Don't worry about that,
Kaidas said.
I wouldn't think of dying before I make you pay for this, both of you.
For what, Jason?
Tenelka asked.
What have they done?
They forced you into this.
Now Kaidas understood. The only way to make Tenelka betray him would be some sort of coercion.
What are they doing? Threatening Alana? If they do anything to hurt her...
Not our style, kid, Han interrupted. You did this all on your own. All we had to do was show up.
Your father is telling the truth, Jason,
Tenelka said.
Look into my heart, and you will know that the decision is mine alone.
Kaidas felt her reaching out, opening her emotions to him. Her presence was filled with sorrow and anger and, most devastating, disappointment. There was love, too, but the kind of lost love that one carries for someone who has died or passed out of one's life forever. Now, Kaidas's heart sank. Sank so far that it seemed to vanish into the cold emptiness he felt gathering inside him. The unthinkable had happened. Tenelka had deserted him. Their love just one more offering to his Sith destiny. He knew the sacrifice would strengthen him eventually, as every sacrifice now strengthened him. But this time it did not feel that way. All Kaidas felt now was angry, stunned, and abandoned. After a moment, Tenel Ka said, I am asking you one last time, Jason. Please, don't make me do this.
I'm sorry, Your Majesty,
Kaidus replied.
I have no choice.
He closed the channel and turned to find his aide already speaking into his own comlink.
Reinforce shields forward,
Orlop was saying.
Expect fire from...
The order came to a crackling end as the Hapen's first salvo hit, overloading the Anakin Solo's shields and flooding the ship's systems with dissipation static. The crew car slowed to a crawl as power was diverted to critical systems. The tunnel switched to emergency illumination, plunging Kaidus and his aide into cold red twilight. Alima Rar had never seen a moon explode, but if she had, she felt sure it would have looked a lot like the Fifth Fleet did at that moment. With the enemy pummeling it from every side, the once mighty fleet had drawn itself into a tight little bundle of mushrooming fire and flashing sheets of heat. The deaths were still panging through the force in the dozens rather than the hundreds or the thousands, but that would soon change. The seam toward which the fleet was angling, between the Bothans and the Hapens, was closing fast, and Alima did not need a battle forecast to know it would be a death trap for any vessel that attempted to squeeze through. This was all the fault of those Darth wannabes hiding on Korriban. They had made her wait 3 days so they could train her in the use of the meditation sphere and prepare their gift to Jason. And what had their gift turned out to be? The holocron of Darth Vectivus, filled with such pearls of wisdom as, never borrow money from someone powerful enough to make you pay, and let your employees know you trust them, then watch them. Who was this guy, their bookkeeper? Ship reminded her that there were many forms of domination. Darth Vectivus had been a middle manager in a galactic mining conglomerate. He had controlled the lives of tens of thousands of laborers and accrued a vast personal fortune far in excess of his personal needs, or the capacity of his salary to provide.
And that will help Jason conquer the galaxy how?
Alima demanded.
Not that it matters. Look at the mess he's gotten himself into. If he doesn't die, he'll be the laughingstock of Coruscant. He'll be as useful to us as this.
Alima hurled the Vectivus holocron in the general direction of the battle. Ship formed a small pocket in the transparent wall and caught it, then informed her that the situation was hardly hopeless.
Look, we are very impressed with your plasma streams and antimatter pellets, but they aren't enough to take on 4 fleets,
Alima said.
Are you mad?
Ship thought it probably was, since it was beginning to take a liking to her, but that was beside the point. The Emperor-to-be was trying to break free. All they needed to do was open a hole for him.
Us and what fleet?
Choose one, Ship suggested. There are 4.
Alima lifted her brow.
We can take over an enemy fleet?
She gasped.
They didn't tell us you could do that.
Control, not command,
Ship clarified.
And only because they have no meditation spheres of their own. They have no defense.
Alima smiled.
It's always best that way, isn't it?
Kaidus did not need battle meditation to know he had already lost the 5th fleet. And to know that only minutes remained before the Anakin Solo was lost as well.
The turbolaser fire was coming not in blossoms or rolling barrages or even in sheets. It was simply there, filling every square centimeter of his observation bubble with fiery, undying brilliance. The color flashed from red to gold to blue, depending on the angle of contact and the condition of the shields. But the intensity never wavered, and he knew that his own gunners had to be firing blind. Even the Anakin Solo's top-grade sensor filters were no match for this kind of blast static. Still, Kytus felt a nagging hope, something pulling at him through the Force, urging him not to give up. He squeezed past his meditation chair, which had been turned to face outward but not yet repaired, then slipped over the arm into the seat. He began to concentrate on his breathing, clearing his mind of all extraneous thoughts so he could expand his battle awareness. Orlop stepped up behind the chair and snuffled for attention.
"Not now," Kytus said. "I need to meditate."
"Of course you do," Orlop replied. "I just wanted to report that your Stealth X is ready for launch."
"Thank you."
Orlop did not go away.
"Is there something else?"
Kytus asked.
"Admiral Atoko is insisting that you give him permission to scuttle the fleet. He claims he has the authority to do it without your approval."
"Does he really think the Wookiees are going to board through that?"
Kytus waved at the firestorm outside. He was tempted to grant permission, but he still felt that nagging hope, something pulling at him in the Force.
"Tell him to hang on for 2 minutes. If he hasn't heard from me by then, he's free to do as he wishes."
"Very well,"
Orlop said, then continued to hover.
"What?"
"Your Stealth X has room for only one person, Colonel,"
he said.
"How am I to escape?"
"I'm trying to work on that now,"
Kytus said,
"but I need to meditate."
Orlop retreated quickly and quietly. Kytus resumed his breathing exercise, expanding his Force awareness to encompass his own fleet, then all fleets in the battle, and finally, when he still hadn't located the source of his nagging hope, the entire theater of combat. The hope grew stronger, summoning him in the direction of the Bothan fleet, urging him to come toward it. Kytus's first reaction was not one of doubt or suspicion. It was simply amazement. How could the Bothans think him foolish enough to fall for such a primitive ploy? They had obviously located a Force user somewhere and assigned him to confuse Kytus's battle meditations, just as Luke had done at Balmora. Kytus ended his meditation and rose, turning his thoughts to the problem of Orlop's escape. The Genet was a fine aide, and one of the few subordinates courageous enough to speak frankly when the situation required. Such an aide would be difficult to replace. Unfortunately, the Genet was too large to fit into the cramped cargo compartment of a Stealth X, especially in a bulky pressure suit. But if the missile compartment were emptied, the hope continued to pull. So hard now that Kytus almost felt as if he were being physically dragged. If the Bothans had found a Force user, they had found a good one. Kytus stopped and followed the feeling to its source, to well beyond the Bothan fleet, where he found a broken, twisted presence that had been inserting itself into his struggles far too often of late. Alima Rar. But something was different. Her power seemed greatly magnified, far too ancient, and somehow even darker than before. Alima continued to pull at him, filling her presence with the promise of salvation and victory, and, well, some other things in which he had no interest. It would be crazy to rush the Bothan fleet, as she was urging, and the Twi'lek was hardly someone to be trusted with one's life, or destiny. But the maneuver would be the last thing the enemy expected. And what was there to lose? Titus dropped back into his chair.
Orlop.
Yes, Colonel?
Orlop stopped behind him.
Have you thought of a way for me to escape?
We're all going to escape,
Titus said.
Have Admiral Atoko turn on the Bothan fleet. He's to confront it head-on, full acceleration. Any vessels too damaged to keep pace will act as our rearguard. Starfighters will jump to Rendezvous Alpha.
We're attacking?
Now, Orlop,
Titus replied.
If Admiral Atoko gives that scuttle order, you won't need an escape vessel.
At once, Colonel!
Orlop scurried away. As Titus sank back into his battle meditation, a desperate craving for sleep rose inside him. His body was telling him that it needed to heal. Of course, Titus had no time for rest. He expanded his force awareness again and found himself momentarily lost in the maelstrom of fear and bitterness that was the Fifth Fleet. He began to sift through the emotions, seeking out those who felt most calm, those who seemed to be in command, and started to brush them with his confidence and hope. Soon small eddies of calm and composure began to swirl through the storm. Titus turned his attention on the heart of the fleet, where he could feel Admiral Atoko's defiant presence fuming over his orders, no doubt contemplating whether to issue the scuttle order anyway. Titus filled his thoughts with the conviction that they would escape, that it was his destiny to survive and unite the galaxy, then began to press down on Atoko's presence. The Admiral seemed startled at first, then confused, but his resistance quickly yielded to obedience, and Titus continued to press. A few moments later, a ripple of astonishment rolled through the force, then quickly became determination as the fleet changed course. The brilliance outside seemed to slide across the observation bubble for a moment, then gradually broke into individual blossoms of energy as the enemy gunners began to worry about overshots hitting a friendly fleet. Titus began to glimpse individual bolts of turbolaser fire fanning out from the Bothan batteries. As the Fifth struck back, tiny blossoms of color erupted against the distant darkness. A shudder raced through the force as the Alliance cruiser Redma suddenly lost its shields and came apart, and whirls of panic and anguish enveloped other vessels as they took hits and began to spit beings and equipment into the void. But overall, the crews of the Fifth remained focused on the attack, too absorbed in their duties to fall prey to the fear and fatalism that had crippled them earlier. Incredibly, the Bothans did not fall back. They simply held their position and continued to exchange fire with the Fifth, which, battered as it was, had them outgunned, outnumbered, and outclassed. Concerned the Bothans were laying a trap, Titus extended his force awareness to their fleet, and was consumed by a rush of fiery pain as his body struggled to remain functional. He opened himself completely to the force, drawing it in through the power not of his anger or fear — he was too exhausted and sad to feel either — but through his faith in his destiny, through the love that gave him the strength to serve that destiny, through his love not only of Alana, but also of Tenel Ka, of Luke and Ben and even Mara, of Jaina and his parents and all the others who had betrayed him, of his allies and enemies and his dead mentors. He drew the force in through his love of them all, of the entire galaxy he was sacrificing himself to save. The pain remained, but with it came the strength Titus needed to remain conscious. When he focused his attention on the Bothan fleet again, he began to sense an odd uncertainty among the commanders, and a dark power behind it. Alima Rar was somehow influencing them, instilling in their minds an atypical indecision. Kaidus suspected they were thinking he was too smart to do this, that surely he knew all they had to do was fall back and let their allies catch the Fifth in a devastating crossfire. He began to press down on them, affirming that belief. Yes, he knew. Kaidus's vision darkened around the edges, and he began to feel lightheaded. Still, he continued to exert pressure, trying to build on the indecision Alima had instilled in them, hoping they would conclude that he wanted them to retreat. That was all it took. The Bothan presences grew decisive, and the fans of their turbolaser fire started to expand as they accelerated toward the Fifth. Then Kaidus's vision closed in, and he felt himself sinking even deeper into his battle meditation, completely through it, to a time not long in the future when this war would be over, when the galaxy would be safe and calm, when he would once again have his family and friends there beside him, helping him to rule in justice and peace.